coming to order. Good morning, everyone. We welcome all of our guests here we have this morning. The first thing we have is the required public meeting. We're going to go to item two to allow for a public comment. We have right now 14 of you that have requested to speak. We would ask, if possible, if you could limit your comments to about 2 minutes or less, because you know what we want to make sure is that all of you feel heard and that we actually are able to sort of listen and sort of digest what you're saying to us. So to allow that to sort of work in the most effective way, that's our respectful request. And if someone's going exceedingly beyond that, I might pipe in a little bit, but we want to listen and hear what you all have to say. So there may be one or two more people on the phone that want to talk, but if you don't mind, I'll just go from top to bottom how I have the sheets and just say your name, and then you get up and go ahead and speak. So the person we have is David Ellison.
Before David speaks, can you recess the supplemental meeting?
Okay. Recess the supplemental meeting.
And the regular.
And the regular meeting.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we're in the public meeting right now.
Good morning, everyone. Mr. Chairman, out of respect for your request, I have two of my members here who donated their 2 minutes to me. My presentation is about 5 minutes.
Okay, who are the two?
James Freeman and Aaron?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, all right.
Anderson.
Okay, super.
I'm David Ellison. I'm a retired deputy chief of police, and I now serve as president of the Dallas Police Retired Officers. Our membership of over 1,000 members includes not only retired police, but firefighters as well. First, let me begin by saying thank you to our trustees. We truly appreciate the effort and time that you put in to make our business. I've been following the actions of the staff and the board very closely since 2017 when House Bill 3150 was passed, and the pension changed dramatically for our retirees. Our net position in 2017 was not going to continue to board's going to continue to waive the directive, why not eliminate it altogether? My suspicion is the reason is because it's a proven policy and should follow. 2019, Senate Bill 322, modified the state government code to require public accountants to select an independent firm to evaluate the appropriate assets and effectiveness of assistant investment practices. Yet, in 2019, the board approved the hiring of Kia Investment Group to perform an evaluation. The problem is that Kia was already serving as the CEO investment advisor. So, in effect, the Kia is evaluating themselves. I don't think that's what the legislature intended. Our peer review, in 2020, lobby compensation group at a cost of $21,501 conducted a peer review. The result of that review revealed that executive management's pay exceeded the market average of 36%, while the remaining staff exceeded 37%. This year, a compensation claim was adopted. The president holds a line on salary increases. Board approved paying employees already receiving above the maximum of their position a lump sum payment that will not be reflected in the base pay until pay rates catch up with our pay. You have to wonder why we spent over $21,000 for a review we will ignore. It was very telling last year when our executive director petitioned the board to authorize her to seek legislative change to allow the staff of DC to transition into the Texas municipal retirement system. It's obvious she does not have confidence in the style of our plan. She does not want to be invested in. So my conclusion, these are a few things that cause retirees to be concerned about our financial plan. Police, fire, and their beneficiaries learn from an early age how to make it on the less competitive way. We work overtime, extra jobs, and even have parallel careers in order to make ends meet. We can't do it anymore. Our age and health prevent our re-entering the workforce. Our annual adjustment benefit supplements for our own protection against inflation and now they're gone. But we see the city employee retirement fund pay the COLA this year of 5% to all of their employees. Police, fire, and their beneficiaries got nothing. We work with the same employer, so where's the equity in that? One group of employees get 5%, we get nothing. Thanks for your time and allow me to speak.
Thank you, David. Glenn?
I'll try to keep this brief. I'm not known for my brevity, and Mr. Ellison covered a lot of things back there. But I'm Glenn Stone. I'm a Dallas native. I'm a 36-year veteran of the Dallas Police Department. I'm a turned-out drop member. I reached my maximum tenure 3 years ago, but I'm still working. I'm married, and I have four children, two of whom, my twins, are in college. I was aware when I hired on the police department that I can make more money in the private sector. I graduated from SMU not because my family's wealthy, but because my mom worked there and I could fill their tuition free. But I didn't want to make more money. I wanted to serve my community, and I have for 36 years. During my entire career, we've been underpaid relative to many of the departments in the area, and we were always told that that was balanced out by our great pension, and a lot of us believe that. As my family grew, I struggled to make ends meet, so I worked that second job, that third job, that fourth job. My kids didn't see me very much a lot. I'm a product of the American dream. My dad's an immigrant. He came here when he was young. His dad was a gardener, and his mom was a maid. My mom was raised with her four sisters by a single mom in a time when that wasn't really too typical. Hard work was not an elective in my family. It was a trait. Police officers, by nature, are suspicious people. It's something that we develop. One of our personal problems that we have in interpersonal relationships a lot of times, for most of us, for many of us. But even the most suspicious people have to have confidants, have to have people that have their back. For many of us, the city was not that person because of violations of trust through the years. But for most of us, the pension was innately trusted as having our fiduciary back. This is a group of people that aren't real trusted. Well, I can tell you that for a lot of us, we feel that some of that trust. for everybody, I'm sure. And I certainly appreciate your efforts. But the tide is going the wrong direction. I'm told that instead of saying that y'all have a fiduciary responsibility to us, the membership, that that's been changed semantically to a fiduciary interest of the plan. That may be fancy semantics. But I just wanted to give you a representation of what your constituency is in case that you forget it. I know that in these times it's difficult to keep the personal part of this in line. I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm a father. My entire career I worked towards retirement. When I was struggling to feed my family and provide for my family, I always thought that my hard work then was going to lead to my secure retirement in my old age. To say that I feel somewhat cheated and robbed by politicians and even by this body at times, that would be an understatement. I'm told that that we don't come and attend these meetings often. This is the first meeting I've ever been to. I appreciate the opportunity to address you. I hope in your quiet times that you'll just keep track and maybe keep my face in mind, because and thousands of other police and firemen who have worked their whole career, looking forward to retirement, that you'll keep us in mind as you go through your daily duties. I appreciate the opportunity to address you.
Thanks, Glenn. James?
I gave up my family.
I'm sorry?
I gave my family.
Okay, super. Okay, Lester?
All right. My name is Lester Mount. Retired from Dallas Fire Department for 35 years. What I want to address is the expenses. The city is responsible for providing office space and paying the staff to administer this pension fund. The previous administrator convinced the board to put up a vote so that we would move out of the city and fund it ourselves. The administrator told me we could afford it, and if we reached the point that we couldn't afford it, we would go back to the city providing those services. And when I talked to the board about it, they said they didn't want the city telling them how much to pay their employees. When I addressed the amount of money they were paying the administrator and others, I was told it was based on a percentage of the value of the fund, which I didn't understand how the value of the fund has anything to do with how much we pay the office staff. But if that's the case, then we need to reduce the salary of the office staff because the value of the fund is decreased. So I would suggest that we move back into the city offices, sell this building, and put the staff back under the city employment. Also put them back where they were as a city employee pension plan. That's basically what I have to say.
Thank you. Well said. Dale?
Mike, first, good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
Appreciate you all giving us some time to address some things here. I'm Mike Glenn, representing thousands of folks. You all look at the paperwork, you see my name, and you know me because I've sent some things to you. You know my story. Never I cover. Now, I'm an Ole Miss graduate. I played football down here. I came from Mississippi, trusting the city of Dallas to take care of myself and my family, like others did. Now, you go out there every night, I can share some stories with you because we had jobs that no one would do. Kelly, you ever thought about walking into a crack house with a gun pointed to your head? Well, we did that while others were sleeping that night, while business people were getting your businesses off the road. Guess what? The Dallas police officers and firefighters were taking care of you and your families. Now, I was trying to figure out what should I say today. It's kind of hard to be kind and nice because for the last 6 years since 2016, this thing started, it's been miserable, okay? Miserable to the max. We have had to now try and find a new way to live until you all do what you're supposed to do to take care of us. Kelly, we're paying your salary. You're paying your salary. picked up $200,000, $300,000 and been giving yourself a $10,000 to $15,000 raise every year since then. You're being paid to do the dirty work. And we don't appreciate it. We know your background. We know where you came from. We know what you did. This is not personal. It's all business. Okay? Because when I look at others that I talk to every day, and they talk about suffering, we all got check engine lights on. You know why? Because when we went out in those crack houses and doing the things we did at night, it was affecting our health. We didn't think that once we crossed the water, got close to some clear water, it would be poisoned. And this is how you say it. Thank you. We appreciate your service. I did nearly 33 years after coming here, after graduating, to get this job. Because I've said this before, in front of Mike Rawlings. We all know the story. We're investigators. We know why this was done. It wasn't because of the pension. It was an intent to change this whole program. Well, that's fine if you want to do that. Go back and hit and stab these old folks in the back and then try to manipulate the younger guys coming on. We know what that has done. That has contributed to a crime problem that's out of control. Go to Oakland, Deep Ellum, Uptown. What's up? You hear the chief say, well, the crime has dropped. Come on, we know better than that. We're old guys. We know what's up. We know how to play with the numbers. But you can't play with life and reality. Okay? Now, I say this. It's time to get into business of taking care of your people. The message that you are sending to us is going right to the open. Younger guys, it's going to a future folks from coming here, because once this hit, I don't care how many commercials they put on TV to make Dallas look like they got it going on. But you know what? You're talking about Frisco, Plano, Fort Worth. You're talking about McKinney. You're talking about people that are booming off of your mistakes here. This is what's going on. Frisco, they love that Dallas put a golf course down in a bootleg in the hood. And look what they got now, because they knew it wasn't going to last. These are the decisions that are being made by people that you have chosen to run this city. Now, public safety, that's a no-no. It's like oil and water, don't mix. Okay? Safety is a major concern, and you continue to punish us. I got one question. What did we do to you all? Other than put our lives on the line for as long as we did, what did we do to you all to make you hate us so much, Kelly? You're not even from here. You understand what I'm saying? This is serious business. Where do we go when we suffer every day? Where do you go to bed at night trying to figure out how you're going to pay these bills? You got medical conditions. You can't even go to the hospital. I got a deal, and I'm sure thousands of us did. $20,000 for medical insurance for the last year. And you can't even go to the doctor to get a check engine light on. So what do? You guys are doing fine. Kelly, I heard when this man asked you, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, we want to give everyone a chance, okay?
Okay, I'm just
and that's what I say. You're getting really close on Kelly. She has our support.
I don't appreciate that. It's not a personal thing. It's all business. Because if you were in my household and thousands of other households, you'll be on the same page we are. But I'm asking you this. What is it going to take? The crime is not going to go down. Public safety, the image of Dallas is going to be, it's already disrupted and disturbed, okay? All I'm asking you is this. If we suffered long enough as retirees, families, We've suffered. Get your knees off of our necks. We got enough.
All right.
Pray at night.
Thanks, Dale. Julia?
I just wanted to say that we have hundreds of, I'm Julian Bernal, a retired deputy chief. I spent 34 years there. I've been here with the pension these matters of pension since it started in Washington from afar. What you don't see here today is a very large group of people that are hurting, and what you see is the emotions spilling out. are a lot of families that have not done well, and they want to be here today, but they can't afford to be driving across country to address you. And we're just all hurting. The police and fire, as Dale described, the police and fire community has suffered greatly. The retirees has suffered greatly. And we keep trying and hoping and praying that the city will step up for us, and we keep doing that, and it doesn't happen. And I, as the board's aware, I'm aware that some board members think the city should pony up a little bit, but it doesn't happen. It never happens. And we just keep waiting, but we're going to wait, and then our families are going to suffer, continue to suffer. I appreciate the work that you do, we do, but we're tired, and we're old, and we can no longer do the things that we could earlier in our lives. But we do appreciate it. We hope that you keep us in mind, as been stated previously, when you try to get us back on our feet, and when you try to get the city to do what they promised they would do for many years. Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Sally?
I'm Sally Lamb. I retired after 34 years of service with DPD, and I'm currently the Vice President of the Dallas Police and Fire Officers Association. In March of 2021, this board was presented with a compensation report from the consulting firm that you hired well over a year prior. You were informed that quite a few members of your staff were paid above the market median, the market average, for their position, and several were, in fact, above the grade maximum for their position. Fast forward to March of 2022, when you discussed the staff compensation plan in your monthly meeting. There are still staff members who are above the grade maximum for their position, and yet it was proposed that they receive another bonus of a set amount or a bonus equal to what would have been their annual increase, their annual adjustment, had they not reached their grade maximum. When asked about this, Kelly said it would be demotivating for them not to be compensated like the rest of the staff. I absolutely agree with Kelly on that. It is demotivating to not get an annual adjustment. Don't misunderstand me. I don't encourage anybody a fair salary. I truly don't. What I do have an issue with is the decision of this board to give out those annual bonuses, and I have an issue that Kelly even suggested such a maneuver to get around that pesky little problem of the grade maximum. Shame on you all. We retirees have received an annual adjustment since 2016. While it appears there have only been three instances in that same time frame that a staff member did get an annual increase or an annual adjustment during or salary bonus during that time. And those three times involved the same employee. It appears this board is very generous with our money, but not to the benefit of pensioners. Shame on you. I would venture to say that there is a retiree in this room who hasn't reached their grade maximum, been topped out in their position during their 20, 30, or 40-year career with DPD or DFR. We understand how people feel about not getting an increase in recognition of a job well done. Yet if you have the right work ethic, you still do your job to the best of your capability. That is the type of people y'all are hiring, right? We retirees dedicated our lives to serving the citizens of Dallas, and now there are those of us who struggle to feed our families because our pension checks have been stagnant while inflation is at an over 40-year high. Gas prices are the highest ever in the U.S., and food prices go up every day. But I guess we should be grateful that the staff members don't have to suffer the same plight that we do. I urge this board to remember your fiduciary responsibilities and to be good stewards of our money, the money we retirees paid into the fund through our faithful years of service to the citizens of Dallas. Do right by us, like you seem to be doing, by the well-compensated staff employees. Or maybe they should have some skin in the game like us. Maybe they shouldn't get an annual increase. Maybe they shouldn't get a bonus until the pension is 70% funded, like we are. Thank you.
Thanks, Sally. Dwight?
The.
Okay, thanks. Michael, you're?
Here.
Okay, you're not, okay. Aaron, you already spoke. Okay, Rick? Rick Salinas?
No, I didn't sign up.
Okay, all right. Christy? Okay, super, okay. Cheryl?
She said no.
Okay, and then William?
No.
Okay, is there anyone online?
They needed to hit five star if they want to raise their hand.
I just would say it's great to have a face, multiple faces, a lot of passion, and, you know, I think, I personally appreciate the totality of all that you guys have to say. I mean, I think we always need to be mindful of the things you're reminding us of. But we are looking forward, not looking backwards. So. Anyone?
No.
Okay.
I should just mention, I agree with Nick. We hear you. My dad was a police officer. My twin brother's a police officer. I fully understand how important these pensions are. Outside of this board, I told the mayor, we need to find a way to put more money into this. And he tasked me with putting together a task force to look at alternative ways to do that. And we have submitted a proposal that had five or six or seven different things to be evaluated. So, I mean, the real answer is, you're right, the city's got to find a way to put more money into the plan. And we are pushing for that. And I'm also, they're evaluating that. And I'm encouraged that I think there is some think light at the end of the tunnel, but it's not a short-term process, unfortunately.
What's your name, sir? I didn't get your name.
My name, I'm Bill Quinn.
Okay, thanks.
We're looking forward, not backwards. Could you maybe explain the definition of what you mean by that?
We have to follow some order here, so it's not a back and forth. This is a time for you all to speak. I was just sort of affirming the collective voice, a lot of different perspectives, a lot of passion. We hear you. We listen. I think there's a lot of unity amongst what you're thinking and what we're saying, and we're that's really all. And it's not a back and forth. It's just not what this is about right now. So
yeah, I understand.
Okay.
It's not back and forth.
Great. Okay.
I'm just trying to get an understanding of what
you
meant by that.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and move on. So do we need to reconvene? Or?
No, we're still doing
okay.
The first two items.
All right.
Under those.
So, Brenda, we're now going to have you report on the health and performance of the pension system.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning, everyone. I want to start the first quarter financial review with the bridge chart. The bridge chart represents the changes in net position over the period by adjusting for investment, benefit, and operations-related transactions during the period to arrive at our ending net position. We began the year with a preliminary net position of approximately $2 billion. Investment-related transactions during the first quarter decreased net position by $84 million, and benefits and operations-related transactions decreased net position by $30 million, our March 31st, 2022 net position is $1.9 billion, or down $114 million since the beginning of the year. Next, I want to briefly discuss some highlights from the financials. I'm going to start with the combined statements of fiduciary net position. This report compares the preliminary results from December 31st, 2021 to the results from March 31st, 2022. The first section is investments. The total investment value at March 31st was $1.85 billion, and that compares to $1.93 billion at year-end. That's a decrease of $86 million in the first quarter. The two largest components of that change were equity securities and fixed income. Equity securities decreased by $76 million, and fixed income decreased by $15 million since year-end. And these declines are related to the public market downturn in the first quarter of the year. As we move down the schedule to receivables, we look at the city and member contributions receivable. It has increased since year-end. That increase is related to the number of days that are accrued at the end of the period. At the end of December, we accrued 10 days, and at the end of March, we accrued 14 days. As we continue down the schedule to cash and cash equivalents, cash has decreased by $27 million since the end of December, and this decrease is related to cash used to pay benefits during the first quarter. And finally, on this schedule, to look at accounts payable and other accrued liabilities, it has declined $910,000 since the end of the year, and that decline is primarily related to the payment of expenses since year-end. Fund management fees have decreased by $672,000. That was partially offset by increases in refund payables of $155,000. Next, I want to look at changes in fiduciary net position. The statement of changes in fiduciary net position compares the results from March 2022 to March 2021. The first section is contributions. And as we look at that, total contributions are basically flat year over year. City contributions increased by $143,000. The floor, which was $5.882 million per pay period last year, has increased to a little over $6 million per period this year. Overall member contributions declined $57,000 year over year. Regular member contributions increased by $293,000 due to salary increases. However, a decline in drop contributions of $163,000 and year-over-year accrual changes offset this increase. Employee headcount year-over-year has increased by a total of 8, so basically flat again year-over-year. As we move to the next section, the investment income, net investment income decreased by $110 million when compared to last year. And if you look at net appreciation or depreciation in the fair value of investments, you will see it also decreased the $110 million. So again, this decline is primarily related to the downturn in public markets in the first quarter of the year. As we move down the schedule to deductions and we look at benefit payments, benefits paid to members have increased by $2.4 million when compared to last year. Service pensions increased by $1.5 million and survivor benefits increased by $955,000. These increases were partially offset by declines in disability payments of $80,000 when compared to the same period last year. New service retirements at higher monthly benefits is the primary driver in the increase in benefits paid to members. The last item here on this schedule, staff salaries and benefits. Staff expenses have decreased year over year, primarily due to vacant staff positions. Are there any questions about the financials?
I just have one question, and this is probably more for Kelly.
on the staff salaries and benefits. It shows that it's down by 7%. We're doing, how many vacancies are you carrying right now?
Four.
Four vacancies.
Right, and we have 23 employees now. When I started, we had 33.
Okay. So you're asking your employees to do more in the short term?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Brenda. Kelly?
Okay, the next thing on the agenda is the contribution report. And one of the things I wanted to say, just as a trying to explain what this meeting is, because we have some new trustees and we have some people in the audience that haven't come before. So one of the changes in HB 3158 that was added by the legislature was these two required public meetings. And the difference between these meetings and our regular monthly board meeting is that members from the public that aren't members of the pension system can come and speak, but you're all welcome to come and speak at any meeting, just so you know that. This meeting, we do it, again, two times a year. It's a little awkward with this first meeting because we don't have new actuarial information. We're delayed because we have some private equity investments that keep us from getting our audit done quickly. I mean, in any case, we probably wouldn't have it by now. But so in this first required public meeting, we just talk about the financial health of the pension system from the financials and the contribution report. But in the next one, when we get the actuarial report, we'll have the other one, and you'll have more information at that time. So that's just kind of why we do this little strange meeting twice a year for those trustees or members that don't understand why we're doing this. So the contribution report is something that this board put in place to monitor the city contributions because we know that's one of our big risks. And when we adopted HB 3158, at that time, the plan was supposed to run out of money, projected to run out of money in 7 years. So there'd be no pension checks, no drop checks, basically starting from, you know, best case 2 years from now, had we not passed HB 3158. So we put this plan in place, and for new trustees that haven't been, that weren't on the board before, when we were negotiating the solution, the city said contributions were going to be a very large number. The staff did not believe the contributions were going to be that number. So the staff came up with the idea of, if you say that's what the contributions are going to be, we're going to hard code those numbers into the bill. And they didn't like that. So that's where the concept of the floor came up. And we talk about this every month when we talk about the contribution report. I'm on page 7 of the PDF in Diligence. This is the March data. There were 3 pay periods in March. But if you look at the third line down that says HB 3158, since the bill came into place, the floor was $674 million. And what the actual contributions were $629 million. So the fact that we added that floor in to tell, you know, basically telling the city, if you think those are the numbers, let's hard code those numbers in, has provided the plan $45 million over the time. One of the things we don't talk about a lot that I wanted to point out, since we're spending a little more time on this report than we do in normal meetings, is I wanted to turn your attention to this next page, which is page 8. And this chart, the top section of this chart, shows us the change in the floor by year. And what you'll see, it's easy to see if you look over to the fourth column over, you see that through this year, through 2022, the floor was going up about 2.75% the last few years. But starting in 2023 and 2024, basically the floor goes away. So that's when we're really going to have to monitor what the city's doing. And you heard Brenda just say contributions over the past year have been flat. So my estimation is, unless something changes with meet and confer, they really start doing a lot of hiring, we're not going to see an increase in contributions next year of a huge amount. We're definitely not going to meet the floor numbers. So we still have a lot of work to do with the city, as you well know, even before we get to the changes that are required in 2025. But just wanted to point that out to you all. And other than that, the contribution report is pretty much how it has been. They're still carrying about 176 positions less than they estimated for the number of people. Most of that is in police. Fire is over by 45 people. Are there any questions on this report or anything related to the contributions from the city or what to expect in the future?
Okay.
No?
Okay. So if we can have a motion to adjourn the required public meeting, but as Kelly said, we're going to go into the regular meeting, and all of you are welcome to stay, and there's actually another opportunity to make a public comment here in a few minutes in context of that meeting. So we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So we're now going to go to the regular meeting. And the first thing we'd like to do is have a moment of silence for members and pensioners who have passed away. Thank you. We'll now move to the consent agenda. We have the minutes from the last meeting. Any comments? Clarifications on those? Okay. We have a motion to approve those?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. The consent agenda, Kelly, anything you want to flag there?
No, nothing unusual.
Okay. Can we have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Now, like I just said a minute ago, would anyone like to say anything that didn't have a chance before? We have another, this will be the last opportunity today to make any sort of public comment. Does anyone have anything? Thanks.
Five star out if anybody's on the phone.
I think we have one comment.
I'm a past guest, so I've been on this board for 13 years, 1987 to 2000. I don't know how many hours you had to put into the thing. I know you guys are volunteers. And I'm a significant boy. I've been on this thing that in common. Thank you. I've been on it in a long time. Thank you all for that. Thank you for the hours you put in. I'm a member of the DPRA far away. And I think eventually we're going to be on the same side because I think we're going to have to go hand in hand with you guys to go to the mayor and city council. To get more funding for the expansion plan. Cannot invest their way out. If you decide to do that, we will be there with you. And if there's a number of ways to raise money to fix this thing, we had a fix. We talked in the legislative session the car there shot it down. What we're going to do is ask the legislature to allow the citizens of Dallas to hold a referendum to raise the tax rate, the sales tax. I think it's 4% of give them the option. We weren't asking the legislature to do it. We asked them to do that. And that was done until the Tea Party man shot it down. That's one way. There's a lot of other ways to do that. So thank you guys for your time. And if you see this, there's a lot of faces here, a lot of dedicated people. I myself got ran over twice. I got shot at twice. I got sued four times. Had the FBI read me my ride twice. And when the first chief police came out of town, he picked me out there and tried to send me a fence in. But I retired undefeated. And I made it through all that. Okay? And through all that, I came to work every day and never missed a day. And that's typical of the police and firefighters. So I encourage you to continue to think ahead, think about how we can fix this thing, how we can help you fix this thing. We are adamant that we've got to get our cost of living thank you. We've got to get that back because there's some folks that are really, really hurt. We want to be a part of it. We think we can help you guys. And we'd like to do that.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to say anything? So this is going to be the last chance today to speak.
I just got to say, throughout the years, all we're saying is that, just like the wife just said, we'll stand on the sidelines here for a long time. All we're looking for is somebody to stand up and say the city's not doing what they need to do. We know that your hands are tied in a lot of ways. You can ask, but they did what they did to us. We ask a lot of things, but they just ignore it. And all we're asking for this board to do is to ask and do what we need to do to force the city to do what they've always said they were going to do. We've had discussions with Kelly over and over about that. When this first started, they're going to do this, they're going to do this, they're going to do this. They're not doing it. They've been lying to us, every single person in this room over here, for years and years and years. So that's where our frustration comes. They don't listen to us, so we have to come down and talk to you. And we're here to try to find out, because like I said, we're getting older, and the people in this room here want a simplified explanation of what their lives are going to look like in the next 3 years or 5 years. Because they don't know and they don't understand that, because they don't have any trust in anyone any longer. And that's why we're frustrated, and that's why we're saying things we probably shouldn't say. But we need somebody to help us. And like I said, we'll stand up with you. We'll do what we need to do. Just point us in the right direction and we'll go there. But we need the city to do what they need to do, and they should have done years ago. And we think that everybody in this room knows that. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Sir, you try to keep it a minute or two.
My name is Aaron Anderson. Like some of us are here, we are ex-military. You know, we serve the country, serve our community. I went from a blue uniform from 71 to 76 in the military, back part of the Vietnam conflict, into another blue uniform, the Dallas Police Department, for 36 years. We all in here at ages now where we're looking at the future. We're scarcely, we really don't want to use the word our legacy. You know, when I was born in East Texas, I was the oldest of 12 kids. My mom and dad didn't have a whole lot of money to feed all of us. But what I'm here to say today is, like everybody else is saying, we live for tomorrow now, because we can't go to work. Most of us can't go to work. It's not a second job. One of the biggest motivating factors that I had at the time was, when you do your time, work your time, serve the community, serve the city of Dallas, that you will have a pension that will somehow satisfy you until the day you die. We appreciate all of the jobs now. We respect it. But one of the biggest motivating factors that people that worked in law enforcement was to have a pension, because I can't get up and go to work tomorrow because of my age. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, we want to be able to tell a young guy, go to the Dallas Police Department or the Dallas Fire Department. 20 years ago, I was telling people every day, go work for the fire and police department. That's a good career. So I hesitate to say that now, but I still trust in the city of Dallas Police Department to a certain degree, and I trust in y'all. So I just want to say, in addition to what everybody else is saying, think about it, because one day, if you live long enough, you will get the same shoes that we're in.
Thank you. Yeah, you already spoke, so real short. Yeah.
I just want to say this. I want to say summary of the same thing that was said by David, the citizens, the unsworn citizens of the employees of the city of Dallas. They're getting everything. We're not getting anything. Okay? But I want to say this also. I am a Christian, and I'm a believer. I know it's hard to tell right now, but I'm an old football player, too. I see my mouth people in the old time. I would like for you all to visit scriptures and understand your position in life on this earth, because we're all here for a purpose. God teaches love, care, helping one another,
yes.
Not to separate and divide and try and damage someone. Okay? Everybody's got a story to tell. We want to tell the story that, hey, you know, these guys have been man and woman enough to step up and correct what was done back in 2017. So when you get on your knees and pray, and you pray for the members that we lose every month, that thing is out of control. The beneficiaries, the list is going down. Kelly, I remember we talked about, you know, you're banking on what, how many folks we don't have to pay for this year. Every time I hear somebody passing away, my mind goes to that. What are they thinking? Do they really care? All I want to say is, if believers in God, just listen to what we say and understand where we are.
Thank you. Okay, well, so appreciate everyone's comments. I would just like to say, you know, personally, and I think for a lot of people, many of us didn't really get involved until 3158 was already a settled matter. A lot of you bring history that we have tried to understand, but having not lived it, we don't fully appreciate it. We've tried to. I just want to say, just on a personal note, I view my role here, unless I can look all of you in the eyes and say that there is long-term viability here, that's what, you know, just as a personal note, that is kind of what I want to be part of. And I think a lot of people share that sentiment. And so we hear all of you loud and clear. We know that there is a bunch of stories and people behind the numbers. We understand that, and I just want you to know personally what I'm committed to. I don't control everything, or I don't control a lot of it, but I'm very committed to a long-term viability, and I think a lot of other people are, and that's what we're endeavoring to do within the system that works. Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on. And we've done the quarterly and monthly reports through the public meeting, so now we're going to move to item 3, active duty survivor benefits. Kelly and Josh.
Okay. As the board knows, we've talked about survivor benefits for survivors of members that pass away while the member's still in active duty. We've talked about that at the board a couple of times. And the last time that we had this conversation, the board decided to have a small subcommittee continue to look at the issue. And on page 36 of Diligent and your PDF is a letter from Siegel. So the committee was Nick, Armando, and Steve, and we had a few different conversations about how the survivor benefit works, what happens when you're in active service versus not, and what do other pension plans do for survivor benefits. And everybody's really all over the board for survivor benefits for active members. We had Siegel take a look at the implications to the plan if we change the benefit or enhance the benefit for active duty survivors. And what we did is we took our actual data for the last 15 years and we sent that information to Siegel, and they basically took a look at that. And just so you know, I think there was between 0 and 12 active duty deaths per year, so an average of just over 5 is what Siegel, they did their smoothing and their actuarial analysis, but they had our actual data from our actual plan is really what I wanted to tell you for a long period of time. And they based their analysis on this. And we had them look at if we change the benefit from the current benefit, which is the 50% survivor benefit or a special survivor if you've met those qualifications, to 100% benefit, what would the implication of the plan be for all active duty deaths or just line of duty deaths? And that's what this analysis talks about. And based on Siegel's calculation, about 30% of active duty deaths are categorized as line of duty deaths. So their summary is that if the benefits were enhanced to give 100% survivor benefit for all active duty deaths, it wouldn't have a major material impact on the funding level, but it would increase the years to fund by 2 years. And currently we're 62 years to full funding, so we would go from 62 years to 64 years to full fund if we increase that benefit. And you know, in 2024, we have to work with the city to come up with a plan to get the plan funded within 30 years. So 2 years isn't a lot, but we already have a big gap to make up in a couple of years with the city that we're going to have to find solutions to. if we do just line of duty deaths, if that benefit is enhanced from just a line of duty deaths, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't materially impact either the years to fund or the other. So the committee decided to recommend that we continue to look at this. We talked to Siegel and to our legislative consultants about it. My preliminary conversations about this with the PRB is that they have been told by certain committees of the legislature they do not intend to hear a single pension bill this next session. But I think it'd be really hard to not hear this bill. But we need to work more with Hilco on that. So that's really where the committee is. We'd also like to continue to explore the idea if we only do line of duty deaths, if we only enhance that benefit, is there a way we can increase or expand what we currently do where we allow drop members to elect 100% joint survivor before they actually retire?
Do you want to add what
Kelly
wrote?
Can you give the history?
Can you simply explain, what is the change? Is it for people with spouses below 55 or, you know, just...
Thank you. So, and you can correct anything that I need to add or to say differently. So if this is what happens when a member that is still in active service passes away, whether it's a line of duty death or for any other reason that isn't line of duty death, but they're still in active service. So regardless, if they have less than 20 years of service, so let's say they're in the training academy and they pass away, they're deemed to have 20 years of service automatically. And then they're deemed to be the highest age for all of the multipliers. So if they're, say they're still in their 40s or something, we'll give them, the system calculates their benefit using the 3% multiplier for their pre-9/1/2017 time and the 2.5% multiplier for their post time, which is the highest multiplier if they're a tier one or tier two. But basically, you're deemed to have 20 years of service and the highest possible multiplier as if you retired at the highest possible multiplier, regardless of how long you've been on the system. The same exact thing for line of duty or any other active death. The only difference currently for DPFP for between the two is whether the benefit's taxable or not. So that's what we currently do. And right now we expanded the opportunity for those members that are in drop. They can right now elect 100% joint survivor. So if they do pass away, they can get 100% benefit instead of the 50% benefit for their spouse. But that right now only applies if you're in drop. Do you want to clarify? Because I know it's very
confusing. So I think one of the things that we can explore, although I believe it would require a legislative change as well, is to allow people, because really going forward we don't anticipate virtually anybody going into drop. I think once somebody is eligible to retire, like that day they could retire and draw a pension, even though they're in active service, we could figure out a way potentially to allow them to make an election that would say that if I were to die tomorrow, my spouse could get 100% benefit, because they're not right now, they don't have that ability to make that election. But I think there's a way that we could do that. It would require more conversations with the, I mean, writing that is not that hard. I think it's, so we'd have to talk to Hilco to see whether that would make sense. I think it probably would, because it's probably actuarially neutral. But I think that takes more conversations with the actuary to understand what the actuarial effect is of that type of an election. But if we could at least try to provide more security for surviving spouses who don't, for active people who don't otherwise have it right now.
Some sort of confusion. I mean, isn't this something that the city would have to approve or negotiate with? We have the ability to increase the liability they're going to fund without their permission?
We don't. No, the legislature does. So we would require legislative authority. So we would have to run a bill to do anything here.
So the city would have to agree to support it, I would assume, or no?
I don't technically know, but I really can't see the bill passing without the city support. And I have reached out to the CFO of the city and sent her the information as well as their actuary and said, do you have any initial thoughts? And they're still thinking about it. They haven't weighed in yet. If they would support it or oppose it or be neutral on it, I don't know.
But for clarity's sake, the change that the committee recommended pursuing is one that we don't have the authority to vote on ourselves. It's one that we have to have legislation in order to do. So that's the riverbanks by which we're bound on this particular issue, yet the committee, and I was part of it, agreed that we should try to pursue that change within and the rules that we're bound by.
And then I think to Bill's point, I
just want to bring this all up because, in, as you and all everybody remembers and newer members, in 2017, and I hate to do this, but I'm just going to bring it up, what was the policy before 2017, Kelly?
So the prior board had signed a resolution that allowed the spouse to elect 100%, an actuarially reduced 100%, if a member died in active service. However, there was no legislative, there was no authority to for the board to have done that.
And the other, let me make one addition to that. The resolution said the person had to be at retirement, normal retirement
right.
age. It wasn't just somebody who had 5 years, but they
right.
had to be at normal retirement age for them to be able, the spouse, to make that election. Even though, but there was no, and, you know, there was no authority in the board. Well, we brought this back to the board, you know, based on the legal analysis that there was no authority and the board rescinded the resolution.
Right. So if you were 49 and, say, 19 years of service, you would not have been able to elect that at any time.
So the resolution that the board rescinded is now being revisited?
No, we're not revisiting the resolution. What we're trying to do is a new enhancement that complies with state law, so we would have to get state law. We don't believe that there's any legal authority in the plan as drafted now for us to redo what they were doing before. So what we want to do is get something in the legislature that provides the benefit that we're talking about here, especially for line of duty deaths.
But to Bill's point about the city, I think what the conversation with the committee was, the line of duty death is a much lower cost benefit, and it seems like an eminently fair benefit to seek, and it's hard to believe that the city could oppose, you know, giving a surviving spouse 100% benefit when someone's killed in the line of duty. The option that we're looking at, potentially exploring also, about giving somebody the ability, while they're in active service, if they've reached retirement age, to elect 100% benefit for their surviving spouse would be intended to be more actuarially neutral, where there would be no complaint about it. So I think we're talking about a very nominal cost for potential changes that would give people some additional security and peace of mind, and also be what looks to be eminently fair and something that would be very difficult to argue against.
So it seems very formulaic for the people that are online, you know, due to death. On duty, off duty, and they are, what happens to a survivor, the spouse of a firefighter or police who is not of retirement age, let's say has 10, 15 years on, and they die outside the line of duty. How much is their spouse, how much would their spouse receive?
Based on
percentage-wise.
It would be generally 50% of the member's benefit. At the 20 years and the highest multipliers, it would be 50% of what the member would have received at that point. Some of them have met the special survivor criteria, so it might be higher. But worst case, 50%.
But if they were in, they could be in drop, they could be in active service and in drop and have elected 100% joint survivor, so they could, if they died off duty, spouse would get, if they were in a drop and made that election, the spouse would get 100%.
I think that's part of the, excuse me, I think that's part of the issue is that there's so many nuances to this plan. And when you start trying to create a blanket statement or blanket policy for the two groups of people, it's hard to get to one that fits for both groups, right? So what we had to do as a committee was look at what we had in the past, what we currently have, and what we want in the future. And that's where we came to this realization that if we're bound by law, we need to do what's within that first. And if we don't like what the law allows us or doesn't allow us to do, then maybe we need to change that part of it. And that's where we came to the resolution or the idea that we need to take this to the state to fix what needs to be fixed. That was the thought process of the committee.
And Tina, like we've always talked about, as we try to affect perhaps other changes down the road to solve our long-term problems, we think it's incredibly important that we don't create vulnerabilities by saying, you know, we're doing something, like, you know, that what we heard from Josh is that resolution, the board didn't have the legal authority to do it. And so we're trying to create a set of facts around how we're stewarding everything that optimizes us making other changes that we think are most important. So playing by the rules here is the way that, you know, we want to operate.
Josh, refresh my memory. What year was that resolution enacted?
2007.
That's when that was put into play.
That's when it was.
So what are we asking for today? I mean, are we asking to adjust for people who may pass in the line of duty, or to work with the legislature in the city to pass and then to make an actuarial equivalent for people who pass early but not in the line of duty?
We're asking that the board supports us to continue to explore this with both Siegel and Hilco, and we would come back to you later with their thoughts on how to structure something and the chances of it passing and where the city is and any additional analysis that the legal has.
Okay.
Yeah, just interim report, but the direction of the committee was to move in this direction.
Yeah.
So, everyone good?
Very quickly, Nick, I just think it'd be important in this resolution to put the intent of what we're trying to do. That way we telegraph to all the retirees and everything what we're trying to do.
I think we're still a little bit in the process away from doing that. We will eventually do that, but we want to kind of codify what our action plan is with our experts and consultants before we do that. So we will do that, exactly what you're suggesting, but at a later meeting. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And to be clear, this is just a benefit for active.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going back to take away survivor benefits.
I'm just trying to say that to Gilbert, because he mentioned retiring.
Yeah, because I did have that question posed to me a couple different ways. Like, are you going to go back and take my benefits away? That is not the intention that's not the path we're headed down. The path we're headed down is for people in the future that need these benefits.
And then is it too early to look into, like, private interest groups that are first responders to get them with Hilco, to work with Hilco and whoever else to throw their support behind this?
We'll ask Hilco on what they think it would take to pass it and what the strategy needs to be. So I don't know if it's too early. I think it probably is too early because we don't at this point know exactly how we're going to frame the legislation and what exactly we're asking for. But, you know, I want to make sure, in my mind, I think it would be hard for anybody to not support the on-duty or the line-of-duty piece, but I want to hear what they have to say on that and if we try to do the other piece.
And this Siegel report, is it for just online?
No.
I mean, on-duty?
The numbers that are shown in the table are all active duty deaths, and the impact for line of duty would be about 30% of that. So
this doesn't show an actuarial offset for people opting that pass not on the line of duty.
Right.
Try to find a way for them to make that election.
Right.
It would be an offset for these numbers.
Right. That's the extra work we need to do with
right.
Siegel.
Okay.
And then it would just be a tax exemption from the pension benefits as well as property and so forth. But
Other benefits come from the state and federal level that we don't impact.
Mm-hmm.
So we just work off of our plan, and the reason it's not taxed is that's actually the federal law.
Okay. Okay, so no motion at this time, just an interim report. Okay, Kelly, employee handbook and policy.
Okay, so this item, first of all, took a lot longer to get done. It's actually not done than I anticipated, and it was only added to your packet last night. The idea was always that we would present the concepts to you at this meeting and then have more time for you to look at it and bring it back in June or even a future meeting for approval. So you received a lot of information last night that you did not see before, so I do apologize for that. It's an intro item. So this is on page 40 of your diligence. Let me just. Okay, so I did a little handbook or a little PowerPoint here just to kind of explain what we're trying to accomplish with this handbook. And basically where we stand today is there are a whole bunch of policies that impact employees. And frankly, the employees don't know where those are. And some of them are really old, and some of them conflict with each other, and some of them really aren't for this century. Maybe that's an exaggeration. But, like, technology and stuff really needs to be updated and those types of things to current rules. So what we've done here is we've tried to create one document that has most of the policies. You'll see it won't have everything in it. But it's a comprehensive handbook that employees will receive when they start with EPFP, and they'll sign off on certain sections of it, and all current employees will get the handbook as well. So it's a comprehensive set. It is modern, so it takes into consideration the world in which we live in today, as well as how laws have changed over time and also best practices. And again, it's accessible to employees. So instead of trying to figure out what policies are out there and how that impacts them, they'll have one place to go to look for things, and then if they need to go somewhere else, we'll refer them to that. The way this handbook was developed, there's the most respected human resources organization is called SHRM, and they actually have this for $400, a subscription that you buy to this employee handbook builder. And you put in the state you live in and different information about your environment and all kinds of different things, and it incorporates the laws that impact you in your state, in your organization, and those types of things. And then annually, you can just update that as the laws change. So you don't have to worry, do I have the most recent information on sexual harassment or FMLA or, you know, whatever it happens to be. They'll take care of that, and then we just do an update every year with the changes that we need. There's a lot of changes that are DPFP specific. So it isn't just, you know, print and then you go. But some of the legal issues, it helps us make sure we're not missing any of those. That's what this is. So as I said, it would be basically a self-contained document, but there are some documents that are going to be outside that the handbook refers to. The most important of that is the ethics policy and the code of conduct. That'll be a separate document. The travel policy and procedure, that's really thick and detailed, and we didn't want to put that much in there. There's the compensation policy. We'll probably have a separate policy on computer stuff. We're working with the consultant now on all the technology pieces to make sure we're getting best practices on that. But depending on the length of that, that may be a separate policy that you see when we come back in June with this. And we also have an annual enrollment guide for benefits, because we didn't want to go through the policy every year and say, you know, your medical provider is Aetna, and here's your deductibles, and here's we didn't want to put all that in the handbook. So that'll always be a separate item as well. Here's a list of the policies right now that it will take the place of. I think there's 13-ish policies on this list. Some of these policies have been approved by the administrator or the executive director of the system, and some were board approved. Those board approved ones, when we bring it back, I'll ask you to rescind those. The others will just rescind administratively. The big changes I wanted to point out to you, anything that was related to what I would consider impacting the employees kind of in a larger way that you would need to be aware of. We've made a lot of other tweaks in here, but they're not significant. So I formed a small subcommittee of employees and talked to them about some of these leave benefits. And just as a way of background, in 2000, when the DPFP separated from the city, they came over, and with them they brought the city policies. So most of our leave policies mirror the city's policies. They that's where they came from, and they haven't been changed. They haven't changed much since then, and the city's policies haven't changed a whole lot since then either. One of the policies that we brought over from the city is this attendance incentive leave policy, and it does not work for us. It is confusing to the employees. It doesn't have the intended consequences, basically. It does nothing to reduce people taking time off, and it actually encourages employees to come to work sick. So the recommendation, the way, let me, before I get into the recommendation, I'll tell you how attendance instead of leave works. So once you've been here for more than a year, if you haven't used any sick leave in a year, you're eligible to earn over the next year basically 6 days of vacation. And then you can accrue up to 2 years of that AIL, so 96 hours or 12 days. And what happens is employees will always use their vacation instead of their sick leave, even if they're sick, to get the AIL. And so it's not accomplishing anything for us. And most employees currently in the organization do earn the AIL. The only ones that haven't been earning it recently have been those with small kids, or maybe they have a one-time issue with a parent that they're taking care of. But the majority of DPFP employees earn the AIL, the 6 days every year they're earning in vacation. So our recommendation would be that we eliminate the AIL program and we take those 6 vacation days that people are earning and we split those between sick days and personal leave days. And it has the advantage to the employees is they don't feel like they're losing 6 vacation days, which they would probably feel like if we just took those away. The advantage to DPFP is the personal days are a use it or lose it. So they don't accrue from year to year, and they're not paid out when an employee leaves. So it has advantages to DPFP. The disadvantage is potentially on those personal days, you don't want everybody taking off all at the same time at the end of the year. So we'd have to manage that. But generally, we think changing the attendance incentive leave to something that will keep employees home if they're sick, but and maybe accomplish what we're trying to do here. We don't have an attendance problem here, and if we do, I think that's a management problem that we don't need an attendance incentive leave for. So there are questions on this issue before I move on to the next one? Okay. We actually talked to the city about this, and every person we talked to, the first thing they said were, we hate this policy. They hate it. They're trying to get rid of it as well, but I don't know what they're going to do on it.
Yeah, we had a fire department, and one of the things was we had to schedule our AIL.
Oh.
So you come to work and you accrue. To your point, you come to work sick some days,
yeah,
and you're still there and you're accruing your AIL, then you had to request and schedule it, and then the department could tell you, no, you can't take it. Well, where's the incentive?
Right.
So, yeah, it needs to be revisited.
Yeah, it doesn't work. The other thing is related to paid holidays. So because we've matched the city on holidays in the past, we currently have 9 holidays and 1 personal day, which is 10 total holidays. And the city has added 3 holidays in the last year. They added Juneteenth, Veterans Day, and Indigenous Peoples Day. So if we wanted to continue to match the city's holidays, we would recommend adding 3 holidays. They added 3 holidays, so that's something for the board to consider. The group of employees that I met with when I talked about this, they said if we add any holidays, the first preference would be Juneteenth, which is one the city added. The second, they actually would prefer Good Friday because the markets are closed and schools are closed, and then either Indigenous People or Veterans Day. But instead of trying to figure out exactly what holidays, wanted to put it out there for the board to see if you even wanted to add any holidays or not. And that's really the only 2 big changes. The other items are really just we've changed the definition of the work period to let people flex time, like the non-exempt employees flex time a little more easily, and just a lot of administrative and legal changes. that I don't think we need to go over at this meeting. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, or the next steps would be, now that you have the draft document, you can take a look at it over the next few weeks and let me know of any comments or concerns, and also any thoughts on these, you know, the two bigger issues that I talked about.
You said right now our policy is 9 paid holidays and 1 personal day.
Right.
If you added holidays, would you eliminate the personal day?
Good. I mean, that's really whatever the board wants to do.
And what is the city? They have a personal day as well as 12 holidays?
They don't have a personal day. They used to have something called a birthday holiday, but they got rid of that in the past. So I think they have 12, just 12 regular holidays, but no personal day.
I think you would eliminate that, and just we can decide how many holidays is the right number and just try to simplify it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any comments? So we're moving towards having a motion on this in a month.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And the only, and we could actually take longer. The only thing is if you wanted to add the Juneteenth holiday, we need a little bit of a motion before Juneteenth in June. But other than that, it could, we could push it June, July, whenever. There's no driving timeline on it. It's just one of those things that's been on my list for a long time to clean up.
So is the city going to observe Juneteenth this year?
Yes, they added those last year.
But they added it last year with the implementation for 2022.
Yes, that and Indigenous People Day and Veterans Day. They'll be off on all those.
Trustee Education and Travel.
There are no requests for Trustee Education and Travel this month. The list of possible classes are available for you on page 99. These are in May. Well, May this month. So if you wanted to go to NCFERS, we would need a motion at this meeting to do that. But this is the list of what's out there. Any motions or anybody interested in these? Okay.
Just before we turn over to Ryan, just, you know, when we see periods of market decline like we've had, you know, I run an investment group. Many other people here are in that same sort of business. Just for my own sanity check, I always go back and look at kind of a 3-year or 5-year trend line on the stock market, and that always gives me a little bit of confidence that the stock market is the place to be, even though on a year-to-date basis it's a, you know, very negative number. Also, I agree with what I heard some people talk about this morning. The inflation is just devastating. I read the report every month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics CPI report, and you know, 8% inflation. It feels a lot more like that. Housing is a third of that number, and they're claiming it's only 5%. I don't know anyone whose home has not gone up more than 5% the last year, or whose rent only went up 5% in the year. So I agree with what I heard earlier, and I think we all agree that inflation is just devastating right now, really devastating, and affecting everything. There's no way to diversify or run away from it. So it's a real issue that we have as a country. But Ryan, tell us.
All right. Only thing getting cheaper is stocks.
Yes.
All right. I'll start with private market.
That's not good.
Private market assets. We received $14 million in distributions through the end of April. We have another $25 million planned over the next few months. That's coming from the AEW portfolio. We haven't seen anything fall through on that front yet, but we've heard from two different managers that banks are taking a pause and just, you know, given all the volatility, you know, taking a little bit more time. So I could see a few delays, but everything is still on track. A reminder, at the March board meeting, we notified the board that we'd be putting the safety reserve into drawdown mode. And as part of that, we redeemed $30 million from the short-term core bond manager, IRM, and transferred that over to cash in April. Happy to report that finally the Global Alpha, the new international small cap manager contract, is complete. We plan to fund $40 million into that account at the beginning of June, and that's going to come from within Global Equity, the passive ACWI manager, Northern Trust. We're going to transfer that over to fund international small cap. I don't have it listed here, but on emerging market debt, we plan to issue an RFP flight to 6 or 7 managers sometime in the next week or so. Let's move this forward as well. So overall, through April, the DPFP portfolio is down 7.8%. The public market portfolio, which is about two-thirds of the portfolio, is down 12%. That's through the end of April. Month-to-date, it's probably down about another 5%. So looking at the equity market correction, this shows percent off high year-to-date through yesterday. U.S. international markets are down about 16-17%. Emerging markets down a little bit over 20%, and then growth has been getting hit the hardest, down 25%. And we've been talking every month now about the equity market correction, but there's also a correction in the bond market going on. This chart shows the last 40-plus years of returns in the U.S. ag bond market. The lowest negative year over the last 40-plus, down 2.9%. We're down 10% year-to-date. So that's all in rate expectation and rate movements. I'll get into in a minute how our fixed income portfolio looks different than this, but it's hitting, Nick said, everywhere right now. So going a bit more into the safety reserve and where we sit right now, we have $151 million in the safety reserve, which is cash and short-term bonds. With the current net monthly outflows, and we're looking at these a lot closer, at least in the investment side now, $9.2 million a month. That's the $151 million would cover net outflows for the next 16 months or through August of 2023. When we say we're drawing down the safety reserve, that was the intended purpose. When there's a market decline, we don't want to be selling stocks. So we're using it as we intended to use it. It's a good thing that we have it here to pay benefits out of. The chart on the bottom left shows that we have an additional $1.1 billion of liquid assets. If this, you know, downturn is very prolonged, we have other liquid assets to pay benefits from. Looking at cash, we're at $66 million at the end of April. We're looking good through the end of July, with, absent any private market distributions coming in, which we expect to occur, we probably tap short-term core bonds again to replenish cash at that time.
If you get some private equity distributions, would they go into the safety reserve or the cash account?
So we talked to the IAC about that issue in March, and the preference from them was to refill the safety reserve first back to target and then redeploy anything extra.
And Gilbert, is that still what you're thinking is now?
That's right. Because remember, the safety reserve is just that. What if this trend continues with both stocks and bonds, you know, very strong negative? And what if the private assets really aren't marked accurately? We've got to have that safety reserve.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So if we get private equity distributions, we would refill the safety reserve.
Yeah, we go back to target.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
And we'll continue to talk to the IT about this issue further along.
Yeah, and then any... Yeah, and any overage down the road, or how there might be overage for some reason, we're hoping to redeploy it back into the equity market.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And just for the people here, when they say IAC, that's a subcommittee of trustees and some investment experts who make recommendations to us and to Ryan on how specifically to invest. So that's not a... just so y'all know.
Okay, looking at the year-to-date bridge chart through the end of April, we ended April at $1.8 billion in NAV, $35 million in net outflows, and $154 million in investment loss. The private markets are about even, maybe up a little bit, actually, based on reporting, which is lagged year-to-date. So all of that loss that you're seeing here, probably a little bit more than all of it, is coming from the public market. So a snapshot on the public portfolio, a lot of numbers here. I'm going to focus on the year-to-date. We are down 12% compared to a 60-40, down 12.3%. So a little bit of outperformance compared to a 60-40 stock and bond portfolio. Basically all of that outperformance is coming from, we look at the blue bar on fixed income. We're down 6.6 compared to down 11.2 for the benchmark. And all of that outperformance is because we have a shorter duration in our fixed income portfolio than the broad market. So the decision in 2017 and 18 to add IRM and then to use that to build the safety reserve put us in a much shorter duration position than the broad market, which is why we're outperforming right now.
Now, a decision to go to small cap has hurt us, though, huh? Adding that.
Correct. You know, we just funded them in September, but
we're down 20% this year.
Correct. So our value manager, Boston Partners, they're the deepest value, the two value. They're down 5.2, so they're outperforming by quite a bit. We've seen a ton of rotation between growth and value. So the one that's getting hit the hardest on the four global managers is Invesco, down 25.
And again, we talk about them every month, but they're the biggest growth manager.
They have the biggest growth tilt, highly concentrated portfolio. They have holdings in Meta, Facebook, PayPal. They typically draw down bigger than the market. Greg, anything you want to add on them?
No leverage?
No leverage.
Okay.
No, that's the issue. It's kind of the concentration in some of those big cash stocks that were doing well for a while and are large performers now.
They don't own more than 5% of the portfolio in any one company, do they? Is that what our guideline is?
Alphabet is a 6.
So our guideline is 5% across all these for the equity portfolio. They're capped at 8% above market weight. So they're a little bit more concentrated than our overall portfolio, but that's for their guidelines. So any other questions on manager performance? And as Nick said, if we look out 3-year trailing, even with the drawdown, this year, stocks are still have given us 9% a year for the last three.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to look at.
Yeah, as you're filling up your pump, your gas pump.
Yeah, exactly. Gives you a lot of comfort.
Look at the 3-year average price of gas.
All right. So looking at the asset allocation detail, just a few things I wanted to point out here as far as potential rebalancing actions that we plan to take. So at the top of the page, the first four names there, Boston Partners, Manulife, Invesco, and Walter Scott, those are our four active global managers. And given Invesco's underperformance and the growth versus value dynamics, they kind of diverge a little bit as far as allocation. So we want to equal weight them again, and the plan is to have all four of those equally weighted, but given performance, they've diverged. So based on current weights, that would be about $121 million each. We plan to do that in the next few weeks. And then looking down the page at bank loans in fixed income, their performance has been flat. That's the only, actually slightly positive. That's the only asset class in public that's up. So given that, they're a little bit above target. We have about, based on current values, play $5 to $7 million that we can pull from that asset class. And we're going to plan to redeploy that into equity to help with equal weighting. So
you're not going to sell Boston Partners, though, are you? You're going to, they're at 141. You said the target is 121.
Yes. So we would sell some of Boston Partners and move that into.
Does that make sense, given that we've gone from this growth outperforming to value, and now value is starting to outperform? Do we want to reduce that?
I mean, policy-wise, like our intention is always to have an equal weight, but it's a matter of how often do you rebalance them and how much should we let it ride. And so, like, you know, we've taken a, you know, there could be more hits to come, but, you know, there's been a pretty big divergence this year and that may continue. We talked to Makita. Their advice was to rebalance the equal weight, but what we're going to do is we're going to send a notification to the IAC next week to say, here's what we're thinking about doing. Do you guys want to talk about it? Do you have feedback? So before we do it, we're going to get there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would like the IAC to weigh in on this before you execute.
Okay.
We understand that what you're suggesting is normal business practice, what we've, you know, the guidelines we've agreed to, but I think we'd like to just get that extra concurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gilbert, you're on board with that?
I talked to him last night.
But then would that come back to the board before you actually execute them?
Yeah.
Or copy
in? Can you hear me there, Nick?
Yeah. The board's got final decision-making on these. Would that recommendation then come back to us in June?
So right now, yeah. Valley does for policy, but...
Hey, Nick, can you hear me real quick?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to what you said. I just want to make sure everyone knows for peace of mind that we really keep the IAC informed on everything. Even if there's a meeting far out in the future, Ryan's been very good about sending emails around and making sure everybody knows everything. So they're constantly informed. So I just want to make sure everybody knows.
So what we'll do, the move that we're talking about, I want to get Global Alpha funded first, which happens at the beginning of June. I don't want to be moving too much money around. So the equal weighting we're talking about would occur probably into the first couple of weeks of June. So we'll get IAC feedback, and then the June meeting's on June 2nd. So we'll talk to the board before we move anything.
Okay.
And give you
I just think the board should be informed.
I mean, timing-wise, it works out well, too.
Yeah.
That's when the June meeting's going to be.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I can see the merits in letting it right a little bit, too, given, you look at the three-year history there. All right. This is just a little bit of a context chart that we added last time that is showing that, average inter-year drop for the S&P is 14% over the last 42 years, and we've ended up positive in 32 of those. A lot of people are predicting that we're going to end up positive this year, but just, good reminder, and what is unusual that stocks and bonds are getting hit at the same time, and Makita's going to come in and talk a bit more about that in June as well. So looking at the calendar, we have a quick item today on BTG, the timber manager, and then in July we're going to have Hancock, the ag manager, come in. So in the next few meetings we'll cover the natural resources portfolio.
So nothing next month then?
It's a shorter meeting. Makita is going to do performance and talk about the market. Any other questions on the portfolio? All right. Thank you. So I'm going to cover BTG, the timber manager, and for that we're going to go into closed session.